Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Dr. Jerry Smith, who oversaw the Contemplating Character exhibit at the Museum of Fine Arts in St. Petersburg, Florida. It goes on until May 29th. We are still in the process of lining up sponsors for Let's Talk Art with Brooke, but in the meantime, if you'd like to support the podcast, please look for my book Reptiles on Caffeine on Amazon. Enjoy the podcast. So, hey, Jerry, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Awesome, awesome. So tell me about the Contemplating Character exhibit. It's a traveling exhibit, right?
Yeah, it is. It's an exhibition of, it's actually Contemplating Character, oil sketches and sketches and oil drawings from Jacques-Louis David to Lucien Freud. Uh-huh. It covers actual years 1760 to 2010.
Wow.
And yes.
It's a long time.
it is a long time, and it includes 152 works.
Wow.
So it's a large scale exhibition, and really quite fascinating in that it's there are portraits, many self-portraits by artists, mm-hmm. portraits of friends and family, images of unknown figures and imaginative portraits, it's really a strong exhibition.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the pictures you have online, and it is quite a diverse selection. You have stuff from Alfred Hitchcock, basic drawings, and to very ornate drawings.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that Alfred Hitchcock, people of a certain age will recognize that image of Alfred Hitchcock in profile, of just this quick contour line drawing,
right,
because it was featured in his television program.
Oh,
Alfred
cool.
Hitchcock Presents.
Right.
Where this line drawing would show up, and then he would step into it. And, hello, I'm Alfred Hitchcock. And do his bit.
Yeah.
And what I never knew, I knew that image from the program,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know it was a self-portrait. I didn't know he drew that.
Right, so, right.
So
yeah.
Really, you find out little things like that in this exhibition.
Right, right. Yeah, that's really interesting. I've never, believe it or not, I've never actually watched Alfred Hitchcock. It's probably been on a few times when I've been in the room, but I've never watched it. But that I think that is fascinating.
Yeah, you need to correct that.
<I'll>
Catch them up with Hitchcock. Good stuff.
Definitely, I'll do. Yeah, that sounds awesome. But yeah, I was looking at some of the ones on Lucian Freud, and didn't realize that he was related to Sigmund.
Right, and with the being the grandson of Sigmund Freud, that that I don't know if it's in the genes or what, but his strong depictions of family and friends. Really kind of delve into their psyche in a lot of ways. They're not pretty pictures, if you will.
Right, right.
So they can be really quite captivating.
Right. And I think that's what I like about this exhibit, because they're not normal. I mean, not just him. I mean, a lot of the other people, they're not just normal portraits. They kind of capture, like you said, capture the psyche. And I really like that. I think that's different. I think that's really, really interesting.
Yeah, they can be very penetrating depictions, and especially you get that sense when you're looking at the self portraits,
mm-hmm.
because when an artist is, if you're having your portrait done,
mm-hmm.
if you're sitting for someone to do your portrait, you're sitting. You might be relaxed. You might smile.
Right.
As the artist is concentrating and really working hard to get the likeness down.
Right.
But when the artist does a self-portrait, they're looking in the mirror and they're seeing themselves concentrating really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Making their self-portrait, and it comes out that way. So often self-portraits are really intense, and it's because
is intensely.
To be able to draw that. So, and this entire exhibition, the portraits come through in so many different ways and fashions. It's one of those rare exhibitions where you can truly, as a curator, truly be putting it up thinking, okay, this image here has the potential of being somebody's favorite.
Yeah.
And you say that for every single one.
Right.
Because if for whatever reason it could be someone's favorite in the entire exhibition, justifiably.
Right, right. And they, it probably is. Yeah. Every one of them probably is someone's favorite. Yeah, so what was it like? This is a traveling exhibition. So what was it? What's it like curating that?
Well, with the traveling exhibitions, you know, since you're not doing all of the initial legwork and putting it together and determining exactly which images to go in the exhibition, you get to experience the, what these curators do during the installation.
Right.
And where you try to make, try to draw out a context and a storyline based on how you're placing things.
Right.
And where you're placing them and with other images. And also create, even though it's not something you study in art history or anything, but you try to create a rhythm and a flow through the exhibition so it becomes of interest, where it doesn't just look like a bunch of, you know, line everything up right along the same, you know, distance apart from each other all the way around the room, you know, like so many postage stamps.
Right,
But you try to make a rhythm and a visual interest, even though people may not instantly snap to it, it just is in speaking to someone. You know, if you speak in a if you're listening to a speaker and they speak in a monotone, you know, even if what they're saying is fascinating, you can nod off.
You're going to be going to sleep, exactly.
So, same thing with an exhibition where you can get people, you know, with 152 works, that's a lot of works to begin with.
That is a lot of works.
If you don't have a visual rhythm within the exhibition, you're going to lose people. That you'll lose their interest. And that's why also we, I certainly enjoy using color for the walls. I'm not a fan of the white walls in art exhibitions.
Right.
I like to bring in color to accentuate and bring warmth to the images. So they're closely related in this one, but we have three different shades of green on the walls. And so people going through, you may not even recognize that it's three different shades, but they're definitely there. And it's about, you know, having a sense of appreciation for the visitor and not wanting to create visitor fatigue.
Right, right, exactly.
So that's part of what it's like to working on a traveling exhibition, as opposed to an exhibition that you are organizing yourself.
Right, right. How much freedom do you have with the traveling exhibitions?
Well, in some sense, I mean, fortunately, Robert Flynn Johnson, whose collection this is, and he's the curator who put it all together out of his own collection, provided most of the label copy. And I tweaked it, you know, made a few edits here and there for our audience. But by and large, it's using what he provided. At other times, you'll work on exhibitions, traveling exhibitions, that do not come with label copy.
Right.
And you have to create it.
Oh, wow.
So it all depends on the exhibition.
Right.
And what it is.
Right. So that's really interesting. I think I just realized that there were some exhibitions that were not, I thought the curator of a museum or a gallery dreamt up whatever exhibit was going on. I didn't realize that there were traveling ones that they're, you know, that, you know, so in that sense. So I think that's interesting.
So many different ways to make it happen. Sometimes it's a collaboration, multiple museums working together to create an exhibition. Sometimes it's just one curator's vision
right.
to put on an exhibition. Mm-hmm. And our exhibitions here at the Museum of Fine Arts in St. Petersburg, we do them all. We, you know, depends on what it is. We have exhibitions we've created, exhibitions of things borrowed, exhibitions of things from the collection, to traveling exhibitions. We've done it, do it all.
Right, right. So what's your favorite picture in this exhibition?
Oh, that's like asking, what's your favorite child?
The features. Yeah.
So that's what, and he has these bright colors that he's using with his features, and it has this sense of being a futurist self-portrait.
Cool.
I think that one's pretty great. And then also I love the, there's a couple of works by the cartoonist Robert Crumb.
Uh-huh.
And he's the individual who in the 60s and 70s did the Keep on Truckin'. Cartoons and Fritz the Cat and all kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
And he did a couple of works in this, and one of them, both, I believe, are from his restaurant series, where he would go to a restaurant and order his meal, sit down and start drawing, and then waitress would come around and he'd order his meal, and he would be drawing on the back of the paper placemat. And when his food arrived, that's when the work was finished. That's when he would stop drawing. So, there's a couple of those in the exhibition. They're just terrific.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, and then you have very serious, you know, works by major artists, Jean-Baptiste Carpeau, that are just wonderful, or Jacques-Louis David.
Yeah.
But then there's also a lot of artists that most people probably have not heard of. There were definitely some new artists for me, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're learning a lot about a lot of different artists from many, many different countries.
Right.
So it's hard to say which is a favorite.
Right. Who were some of the new artists for you?
Let's see. I'm trying to go through this. Henry Lehmann, for instance, a French artist who was born in Germany and not somebody I had been familiar with. And there's just a wonderful family portrait that he created. But there's actually several more.
Right.
Alphonse Osbert, who I've looked into him a little more to find out about his modernism. And he's a French artist, and this self-portrait is just so strong and powerful. But again, it was a new artist for me.
Right.
And there's many.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of them would be new to me. I love the pictures that you guys have, like the portraits that are on the exhibition. I haven't seen them all, obviously, because there's a lot of them.
Yes, there are quite a few.
So how do you think they all travel?
In what regard?
Like, do they, it's got to be a huge ordeal to make, to you know, send them around and just kind of, it's...
Well, special, they are trucked in, you know, they go on special art couriers, and there are crates that are made. I forget how many crates there were, but several crates, and each crate is so specifically designed. So you'll have a crate that's, let's say, roughly 4 feet by 4 feet, and within that are perfectly slotted areas with foam rubber to cushion everything for every single framed work to travel. And because all of the works do come to us framed and ready to be installed. And it can be quite an endeavor when you're working on exhibitions to work out the all of the shipping needs, especially if you're borrowing things from around the world and you're having to make sure all you get in all these different things from around the world. They have to fly into New York or Miami and go through customs, be put on a truck and arrive. Insurance values will determine how many works can go on a truck at one time. So it can be quite a hectic thing. That's why, fortunately, curators don't get overly involved in that.
That's the
work of the registrars. The registrars who really track and make sense of all the handling and movement of art. They're the ones who make all the shipping arrangements.
Oh, very cool. I didn't know that. That's
that's. I couldn't do this without a registrar. You know, we have a wonderful registrar here at the museum who is able to handle all those logistics.
That's really cool. So how did you get into curating?
I went into art history a little bit later in life, just for my own entertainment, but then found that I really enjoyed it, so I kept going to school. And initially I thought I would teach, but while I was working, I worked as a research assistant at the Phoenix Art Museum, and I was working on a project that had me in the vaults and storage, going through, looking at some things. And suddenly I was holding this little Corot, a small painting, and I've always loved Corot, fabulous artist. And just having that instant, wow, I'm holding a Corot, nobody's here to haul me out, you know, take me away from and seeing the brushwork and just thinking, wow, Corot was right here painting this work. And here I am looking, and that up close personal experience.
It's kind of surreal.
Actual work of art is was told me, wow, I want to work in a museum. I want to be a curator. And so that's why I am doing this now. It's because I was fortunate enough to be able to attend school, go through school, ended up with my PhD, and then found work as a curator. Went back actually to the Phoenix Art Museum for many years, and now here in Florida as the chief curator.
How do you like Florida as opposed to Phoenix?
Both wonderful places. The you know, you don't still don't have to shovel sunshine. It's great. But it's dramatically different. Phoenix is the desert. Hot and dry heat, but very, very, very hot. And Florida is beautiful, moist heat. I'm still not used to seeing water everywhere.
That's
different for me.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. So what other kinds of exhibits do you guys have coming up?
Well, right now, actually, in conjunction, it's near the same space where we have Contemplating Character. We have the an exhibition of the art of the classical guitar.
Ooh.
Which is 18 classical guitars from the 1840s to 1990. And we have the actual instruments, amazing instruments. They're beautiful designs, beautiful woodwork. So it's like you're looking at beautiful furniture, but with strings. And since they are instruments and living instruments, that we master guitarists who made recordings for people to listen to, either here in the exhibition on iPads or through our app, MFA Viewpoint. So you can go on that and listen to the different guitars and the images of them. So that one's a really, really great exhibition.
Yeah,
we also
like
have opening, actually opens tomorrow, an exhibition by the artist Vanessa Diaz, in which she recontextualizes our decorative arts galleries, in which she is doing some fun and funky things with the space and kind of not deconstructing because it's a literary term, but changing up the way you experience an interior space.
Cool.
So doing things like putting multiple chandeliers in the space or carpeting up on the walls. And so it's a site-specific installation, and that is just opening right now.
Awesome.
So that opens tomorrow, and will be up for the next couple of months. And then our main exhibition coming up next, after Contemplating Characters, is a work by Shanna Moulton. And she is a conceptual video performance artist, and there will be installations and film videos of her, and she's going to perform an opera here October.
A full opera?
Yeah, she's doing an actual opera.
Wow.
I don't know exactly what that will entail, but looking forward to
it. Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, we do the very traditional things, like the Contemplating Character, which is largely a 19th century drawing exhibition.
Right.
To this very cutting edge contemporary thing. And everything in between. So we try to keep things fresh and fun and kind of active. So that's what we're doing here. I think it's been a lot of fun and will continue to be so.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really great. Well, it was great talking to you. I really appreciate it, Jerry.
Well, I'm happy to do this, and wish you the best of luck in everything, and hopefully you can come out and see the exhibition before it closes.
Absolutely. Hang on one second. I'm going to... Thank you so much to Dr. Jerry Smith for telling us about the Contemplating Character exhibit at the Museum of Fine Arts in St. Petersburg, Florida. And thank you to you for listening. I know I learned a lot. And if you are in the St. Petersburg area, check out the gallery. They always have a lot of great stuff going on. If you are interested in having us promote your product or service, if you have a comment, or if you have any ideas for future podcasts, or would like to be on the show yourself, please contact me at arttalkwithbrooke@gmail.com. That's all one word and Brooke with an E. Thanks.